listening to Creative and Curious, a weekly podcast made for creative seekers who are compelled to let your inner artist reign free. Here we explore the mystery of how creating makes us better humans and artists. I'm Marika, and welcome to today's discoveries. Episode 6 of Creative and Curious. And today I want to continue the conversation about how to create a creative practice habit. In episode 5, I really dug into the nitty-gritty mechanics to get yourself into the studio and start creating. A lot of that work is based on typical advice around habit making and the kinds of techniques I use to get myself into the gym and to create an ongoing creative practice of my own. These include setting goals, making them manageable, scheduling, tracking, setting up rewards, making it easy and making other things hard, stacking habits, and using symbols like uniforms to help groove you into your creative practice habit. These are awesome ways to get into the studio, to pick up a paintbrush, and to start creating. They work as long as you are committed to them, and I encourage you to try all of those techniques, if not just a few of them. They also only work if you practice self-compassion with yourself, too. This means giving yourself room to mess up. Know that your goals come in baby steps and practice baby steps. When you take a step back, when you go backward, keep being kind to yourself and keep showing up again. It's okay if it doesn't work out right away. It's not going to work out right away. In fact, it won't work out right away. Allow yourself the love to be patient with yourself as you figure out what a creative practice looks like for you in your life and in this moment. It will always change. And wherever you are in this practice, it is perfect. It is absolutely perfect for you. I can't stress around how important it is to start with self-compassion and the acknowledgement that change just takes time. Just because you love something does not mean it's going to be easy. Great point. Having kids demonstrates this over and over and over again. I am passionate about them. I love them so much. They are not easy. Just because you have the desire doesn't mean it's going to be easy either. If you stop moving towards this goal, you will be moving away from your authentic self, and your general happiness meter is going to start to plummet. That desire, that little niggle in your ear, that little worm telling you you need to create something, that is what is calling you. And when you answer it, expect the change, but expect slow growth when you do it. Be kind to yourself as we work through this. Self-compassion. It all doesn't happen right away. So now that you're primed with self-compassion, you've loved yourself up, you're being kind to yourself, let's move into the larger sources of motivation that will either keep you on track or are going to divert you from this habit forming we're talking about. These underlying motivators that keep you connected and engaged and actually wanting to have a practice in the first place are probably key as the meaning of an art ritual. These contributing factors, these motivating factors are managing your self-identity, managing your desired emotions, and leveraging your community. So let's start. So let's be honest for a second about what you think about yourself and your identity. Do you think of yourself as an artist? Or do you think that you're an imposter, a hobbyist, a dabbler, an amateur? And what do you think of those things when you think of those? Check in for a moment and consider what you believe the difference between those identities are. So let me guess a few right now. An imposter, hobbyist, dabbler, amateur is or does. Practices on the side when they feel like it and they wait for inspiration to hit them. They experiment and dabble without commitment to any idea or medium. They're just okay at what they do. They're not fantastic. There's no genius here. They usually give away their art. They can't make everything beautiful. Every now and then they can do something that they're pretty proud of, but mostly they can't make everything beautiful. They don't have a studio. They don't get paid. They like being creative, but don't have time for it. And they have a hard time being consistent. Let's take a look at some of the things you might think of as an artist. An artist practices all the time, is full-time. They have a dream studio. They're an expert at their craft. They are brilliant at everything they touch. They can't help it. They sell their work. They are awash in a beautiful creative glow at all times. And they can't help but be creative. Creativity just flows out of them. So these are the characteristics of an artist, essentially somebody who just lives, breathes, and eats creativity and beauty. And they just can't help it. Everything just flows through them all the time. So here's the thing. If you don't consider yourself an artist, you simply don't believe that you have time, space, or talent for your practice. If you don't believe that you have time, space, or talent for your practice, guess what? You will never create a creative practice, and you'll never consider yourself an artist. And this is what I'm getting at. Let's break this mindset. Let's change the definition of an artist, and let's get real about what a real artist does and how they behave. So let me start here instead. An artist works hard, practices and experiments, is always learning, produces great work, good work, okay work, crappy and ugly work, but only shows the good stuff, maybe. Isn't so great at new things, just like everyone else, but knows that the more they practice, the better they're going to get at it. They don't feel creative all the time. Sometimes they feel downright ugly and depressed, just like everyone else sometimes. They do have creative habits that keep them creating, even when they don't want to. They make time to practice. They make space for their creative practice. And guess what? They call themselves an artist because anybody can do that. So the only real difference between the hobbyist and the artist is mindset and a devotion to creative practice and the identity that they are an artist, the belief that they are an artist. And that belief, that identity, is what keeps them in the game. It's what keeps them coming back to their studio, to their practice, is the belief that they're an artist, that they're not some amateur or hobbyist. They are an artist. And let me ask you, why can't you call yourself an artist? So do you have a voice inside of you that desires to be creative? Then you have the potential to be an artist, and you need to embrace it, because it's going to help you get into the studio. You have to believe that you're an artist. That is your identity, and you're destined to be an artist. If you don't believe you are an artist now, believe that you are destined to be an artist, that you have that in you, and it's just crying to express itself. And if it doesn't, you risk being taken off track of your true identity, your true soul self. Embrace that little baby artist and tell her, yes, you are an artist. It is in you. There's a diamond, a jewel of creativity inside you. That is your creativity. It is your inner artist. And that is your claim to being an artist. The only thing missing now is a regular creative practice. Believe that you're an artist. Practice this every day. Tell yourself you are an artist. Let your inner artist just bask in the kind words that you are an artist. Your creative practice, the goals you set around how you want to practice and what your medium is, like painting, for example, for me, will help you feel like you're an artist. Go about your business and remind yourself every day that you're an artist. You don't have to tell everybody that you're an artist. You just have to believe that you are an artist. You just have to believe that that potential is inside of you. And because of that potential, you're going to act. Guess what? Notice how telling yourself this every day may actually start to change the way that you behave in the world. Notice the moments that you do things that are artist-like. in which the baby little inner artist is getting a chance to express itself and experiment with creativity because she's being let into the world. She's being recognized. Notice how telling yourself this every day may actually start to change the way that you behave in the world. It might actually be the one thing that's going to get you into your creative practice. Maybe just changing this mindset, changing it from I'm a hobbyist to an artist, that is going to get you into the studio. But also notice the moments that you do things that are artist-like in which the baby inner artist is experimenting now. It's getting a chance to express itself and experiment with creativity because she's being let into the world. Finally, the door is opening for her to explore. And when you act like an artist outside of the creative practice, when this little inner artist is coming out and whispering things in your ear or expressing itself, these acts also count towards your development as a creative and your creative practice. These count. These are part of your creative practice, and they have meaning in this larger habit-forming practice you are engaged in. Creativity and lifestyle are connected. Artful living and living like an artist are nuanced and not only practiced with your paintbrushes and your tools. They are practiced in the way that you live and the way that you experience the world around you. Examples. Do you pay more attention to the color of your clothes when you let your little inner artist out? Do you notice the clouds and write poems about them in your heads? Do you notice the beauty in the day, the light, the colors, the sounds of the birds? Do you literally stop and smell the roses? Does everything around you suddenly seem like art? This is the life of an artist. Embrace that these are exercises and practices towards your goals and developing your art identity as an artist. When you notice the beauty, count them towards your goals. Be intentional about it and be an artist. Just be it in your living and see how it unfolds in your daily life and into your creative practice. Again, I want to stress these are times when you are not actually creating, but they act like fuel for your creative fire when you do engage in your craft, whether it's painting, writing, singing, dancing. The more that you recognize that these little artist-like thoughts and habits are serving your goals to maintain your creative practice, the more momentum you will build towards establishing your creative practice. You'll begin to view your creative practice not just as a series of goals, but of a practice of aligning, enjoying, and expressing your life and the practice of being human. To document these moments to keep you motivated, you can journal about these moments. And here are some examples that you can journal about or just notice, or you could videotape or take pictures of as well, however way you want to document it. So you're sort of collecting these little jewels of creative moments in your life. Do you paint with your eyes? Do you look at a scene, a beautiful tree, a flower, and you think about what colors you might use, what brush strokes, how you would paint that moment? If you're a writer, how would you describe these things around you? Do you think about your craft? Do you think about a painting that you're working on, a poem, the dance, the music that you're composing? Are you thinking about ways to improve it, the next steps that you're going to bring to it the next time that you go into the studio? Again, do you notice and appreciate the beauty around you? Do you notice that Mother Nature, the environment, is the most amazing art project ever? Do you ask what about this beauty makes it so beautiful? Could there be a more artist-like question in the world? What is beauty? How does this beauty work? What are the sensations, the colors, the ingredients, the moment that you're loving so much to this beautiful thing or this beautiful moment? How can they be captured in your art? Do you just have these moments? Do you think about these things? Or can you think about those things? Are you listening to a podcast about creativity and art? These are moments, absolutely, when you get to count that you're an artist. You're curious. You're being curious about your creativity. This counts as being an artist. Beyond Mother Nature, do you enjoy all the art around you? Do you feel like an artist and enjoy it? This includes like the furniture and the paintings and the design and the music that saturates our lives. Every marketing thing around us is an art experience of its own. And do you notice it? Do you critique it? Do you love it? Are there things that you're really enjoying about these creative projects that are living all around us? What about thought experiences? Do you ever think about mixing up the senses in the arts? Like, for example, I was away this weekend listening to a lot of Led Zeppelin because that's all they were playing on the radio. And I love Led Zeppelin too. It was very enjoyable. But I was wondering, like, what would it be like if I was an artist like Led Zeppelin? What kind of paintings would I create if I was like Led Zeppelin? How could I do that culturally if I was like Led Zeppelin now in 2020? I'm mixing up the music with the painting and the time to try to figure out how the two connect and how I can imbue that in my own art. What if I was a chef who cooked like Van Gogh? What would that look like if that was my art? Or what about a painting that captures a dance? Other moments include journaling about your craft. For example, when I go on a camping trip and I don't take any painting with me, which I usually don't, I will sometimes bring my journal. And in my journal, I'll actually write about painting. And this can include colors. I can write forever about one color, Alsarian red, for example. I could write about 3 pages about what that color means, what it instills in me, what I think it communicates. So you can journal about your craft. If you're a writer, that's easy too. You can just play with words, right? And besides a journal, if you're not much of a journaler, but you'd like to do other kinds of collecting, you can collect inspiration sources for your journal in your hands or in your photos. So you can take pictures. It could be a visual journal. You could treat yourself like an art experiment, meaning like how you dress can be a way to express yourself, a way to show how creative you are, a way to feel like an artist, how you do your hair, what kind of sweatshirts you wear, those kinds of things. And you can imbue your rituals. For me, it's my morning ritual with a sense of incorporating appreciation of beauty in all its forms, not just visual forms, but in the moments that are beautiful because they're so human, in the child talking to the older woman on the streets, in the sunsets, in the stories that I listen to. I practice a lot of gratitude, which I believe is appreciation for the beauty all around us. When you appreciate these artist-like moments in your life, you move past only defining yourself as an artist by the amount of butt time in your studio and being an artist and recognizing that being an artist is about living, about being in the moment and whatever moment you are in, by appreciating it and relating to it and expressing yourself through it. Collecting these moments is a way to move past just habit-making mechanics like we talked about in the last episode to building and appreciating what you do and building your identity as an artist. It becomes a lifestyle. If you practice in every way and you recognize that your practice is beyond studio time, you will feel like an artist. And feeling like an artist is what makes this work. That's what gets you into your studio. That's what gets you to create, right? When you feel like an artist, you will create. The more you feel like an artist, the more you will create. The more that you have this voice in your head telling you that you're a hobbyist, that you're an amateur, you're not good enough, all these things, that voice is going to get you right out of the studio. But you have this inner artist, you have this desire, you have this little person inside of you who's like, no, no, I want to create. And that inner artist needs a voice. It needs a voice not only in the studio, it needs a voice in your life, in your everyday life-to-life moments. And it probably already does. You're probably already doing a lot of these things already. You're probably already noticing the beauty. You're probably already feeling little moments of inspiration as you're walking down the street. When you notice the light, for example, when a story brings you to tears, these are all beautiful artistic moments, the moments of us living that we can collect and we can express in our studio time. And this brings me to the next point. So we've got identity. Identity is huge. You've got to believe you're an artist, that you're destined to do this, right? As long as you believe that you are destined to do this, you're going to keep creating. And I believe if you didn't get from this last little segment, we all have the potential to be artists simply by appreciating living. So that's number one, working on that piece. that you are entitled to being an artist because you're here. And this brings me to the next point, though, because possibly one of the biggest reasons we don't act is because of our emotions. There really isn't a straightforward logic to why we don't do just what we want, is there? I mean, you have this voice, you have this inner artist that's telling you, hey, we got to do this. This is going to feel good. It's going to be good for us. It's going to be good for life in general, for just living here on this planet. We have it. We have this. We have the message. We know what the message is, but we're not doing anything. And if there was an easy way to program us to actually do something, it would be a lot easier to change, right? If I could just press a few buttons and suddenly your program's different and you're just heading into the studio and creating like a little magical robot, wouldn't that be great? But it doesn't work that way. Instead, we can get frustrated at the source of inactivity in ourselves. We want something, and yet we're not doing anything about it. And getting stuck in that little process of I want, but I'm not doing, that is a lot of work. That's actually more work than picking up a paintbrush or even painting. And a lot of that work is because you're dealing with the fear. A lot of your bigger goals and dreams can create an avalanche of fear and emotions. And it's fine. It's okay. It is scary. It's a lot to start. And especially the bigger your goals and the bigger your hopes and aspirations, the more fear you're going to have. Starting a creative practice doesn't have any guarantees attached to it. You only want to do it because you want to do it. No one's forcing you. You can go back to your old job if you want to. Sometimes just grabbing for something you want because you want it is the scary point. It is the thing that maybe you don't even feel like you deserve. For whatever reason, by the way. And these are all emotional, illogical reasons. Huge obstacles of action are emotional. It is not necessarily the mechanics and the ins and outs of how habits are formed. Sometimes it's not even your identity, but your fear of breaking through, creating change, getting better, moving closer to your goals, or just even finding out what you're capable of. All these things create this fear that just holds you in a paralysis in this cycle, this crazy little cycle that you're going through. And for this reason, in order to be honest with ourselves, we need to look at our emotional outlook for why we're not moving forward and to start to own our emotions so that we will move forward. And what I mean by this is be intentional about how you want to feel. How do you want to feel? You're in charge of your emotions here. You are the one who conjure them up. And believe me, 5 years ago, if you had told me and I had heard people say you are in charge of your emotional state, I was like, no, I'm not. I'm not in charge. There are people on this planet who are pissing me off, right? Who are jerking me around, who are lying to me, who aren't doing what I'm asking them to do. And they're the ones that are making me feel this way. And I understand that, but the truth is, we own the emotions. They are ours. They are coming from us. Nobody is putting them inside of us. They're just doing their thing. They've got whatever those people out there who are making you mad or not doing what you say. They're in their own little world. It has nothing to do with you. But what we can own is our emotions. And if we do the work, we can be in charge of our own emotions. We can create them, but we have to be intentional. And that's the hard part. Being intentional about your emotions means that you're going to have to face that there's some fear. But at the same time, you're going to have to face what you really want. And sometimes that can be scary, but also it can be so completely empowering when you face what you really want emotionally day to day in your world. So let's be honest about this. I have some questions for you. Do you want to be in the flow, creating, having fun? Do you want to numb out and watch TV? Do you want to feel adventurous, travel the world? Do you want to feel connected to your community? How do you really want to feel? The reason this can be so powerful is that once you are clear about how you want to feel at the end of the day, you can let that guide you in your decision making. You can ask yourself, with each choice that you have in the day, how do I really want to feel? And move in the direction of that emotion. And this is the work, by the way, of Danielle Laporte, and the source of her work in the book called The Desire Map. So if you really want to dig into this, you can dig into her work around The Desire Map, which is a book that she does, and she does workshops as well. But let me tell you how this has impacted me. What I've noticed, number one, is that it's not the easiest thing to recognize. How you really want to feel is not necessarily the obvious answers to this question. Some things may come immediately to mind, like you want to feel loved or connected and peaceful, which are great. Please, they are wonderful things that you want to feel. These things are really good, but they don't really motivate you, right, to have a creative practice. And what we're really getting at here is, what are the emotions that we want to feel to get us into our creative practice that are going to keep us in our creative practice? You're looking for the feelings that drive you, either to act because you love the feeling of them. So that's what we're looking for, the emotions that help you have a creative practice that will keep you motivated and in the studio. And the best way that I've been able to track this, so like I said, it's not the easiest thing to recognize. I love connection and peace. Those are great things, but those are actually not helping me move into the studio. They might help you. That might help you, but I'm going to get there. What I found is that I have to move backwards. So there are things in my life that I'm very attracted to and that I keep moving into, and maybe that don't have the pressure of a creative practice or some of the wounds around a creative practice. What these things have done is reveal the emotional states that I like to be in because of them. For example, I'm a rock climber, and that's not the most peaceful sport at all. It actually is kind of an edgy sport. It's a little scary. It's always been a little scary for me. And it's not that I like to feel necessarily scared or fearful, though I do believe that following the edge of your fear moves you into growth. I do like the excitement of something a little scary, not too scary, but a little scary. Though sometimes rock climbing can be pretty scary. And that made me think, I'm a rock climber. I like to be scared, but I'm not trying to be in the studio to be scared, but I am. And I do like to be excited. I do like to feel like I'm being pushed and that I'm creating something that I'm super excited about. Here are my top three motivating emotions that I've identified as they are right now. By the way, your emotions can change. I want to feel like I belong. I want to feel comfortable in my skin. I want to feel like I am the master of my domain, not just in my studio, but in life, that I am accepted and a part of the community. And again, this is something I give to myself. I don't give this to other people. I don't allow other people the power of telling me whether or not I'm accepted and part of the community. I am here, and therefore I am accepted and I am part of the community. I belong, because that's what way I want to feel. I want to feel like I belong here. I like to feel appreciated. I definitely like it when my kids give me a hug and tell me that I'm doing a good job, which sometimes they actually do. Or my husband gives me a hug and tells me that he appreciates what I've done for the day. I love it when people come to my workshops and they tell me at the end of the workshop that it was really good and that they really appreciated my teaching. I like people recognizing the work that I put in and given to them. I like feeling appreciated. And this is a much more difficult one for me to give to myself, because that means that I have to appreciate myself. And it doesn't, and I'm not going to hang that on the hats of other people. So I'm working very intentionally towards appreciating myself as I am in this moment, knowing that I have a lot of work that I want to accomplish, but that I'm going to appreciate myself. And then the final one I was talking about, I like to feel excited. And the excited one is the one that really motivates me in the studio. The other things kind of ground me, be it that sense of belonging, that feeling of appreciating myself. But what excites me and is what gets me into the studio. It is the main emotion that that I bring to every day when I walk in the door and I start writing my podcast or I start working on a painting, I work towards excitement. The funny thing about this is that the more that I realize that I want to feel excited about what I'm doing, guess what happens? The more excited I am about what I'm doing. It's a crazy kind of magic. Like as soon as you get intentional about your emotion and the emotions that you want, suddenly they start coming to you and that's when you start realizing, wait, I don't have to wait for anybody to make me excited or feel like I belong or feel like I'm appreciated. I can just be on the planet and feel those things. It's crazy. The more that I know that I want to be excited, the more excited I am about my work and about the projects I'm working on. And then guess what? The more I attract excitement. It feels like this crazy little cycle. It just keeps happening. It's fascinating. So work on that. Once you know how you want to feel, really paying attention to the things that you're attracted to and the emotions that you really seem to want to hold on to, track that to your creative practice. Being excited for me is being baked into my work as we speak. The more that I want to feel excited, the more excited I get. Track that into your creative practice. I need projects that I can get excited about. The series or the collection that I'm working on has to be challenging. It has to push me, and I have to enjoy it for the excitement of those things. If I'm excited, I'm working and moving in the direction of my goals easily, with flow, not always perfectly, not always without friction, but that excitement makes me so much more productive than I could have ever imagined. So my advice, ask yourself this question, how do you want to feel? At least once a week, if not daily. And notice the moments when you love how you're feeling. Define them and get really clear about how you're feeling and how you can capture that. And once you're clear about how you want to feel, journal about the feeling. What do you need to feel it? What makes it compelling? How do you feel that way that day or week or month? Get really intimate with the feeling and notice how it is triggered in the work that you do. Once you understand the mechanics, you're really moving into that feeling, it will motivate you and it will seek you out. You won't have to be so intentional about it. And then bake it into your practice, right? Bring that into your art ritual, that emotion, and notice how your creative practice incites those emotions and let them snowball into your practice and outside of it. If you are excited in the studio and wherever you are practicing your creative practice, guess what's going to happen outside of the studio? You're going to be excited outside of the studio too. It's amazing. I believe managing your identity as an artist and owning and cultivating the emotions you want to feel are powerful tools to help you maintain your creative practice. They are so crucial. Without them, I'm sure creating habits will be harder. Work on them simultaneously while you set your goals to be in your studio on a regular schedule, and your progress will be amplified, seriously amplified. I wish somebody had told me this stuff before. I wish that I understood that habits were beyond the mechanics and into the identity and into the emotions, because it would have been so much easier for me to really process all the components and not kind of run through it in this messy sort of way and then look back and go, oh yeah, there was all these other things that I was working with besides just trying to get myself in the studio. The last helpful reinforcement to help with your creative habit making I want to talk about is how you can leverage the people in your life who love and support you and who you love and support. In other words, get a little help from your friends. Find the people who you can invite into your creative practice in gentle ways that feel safe for you. Before you even invite them, you do want to make sure that you are clear about what feels safe and comfortable to you in inviting them into your creative practice. This is really delicate work. We are delicate souls, really exploring our experience of living through the arts. And it's meaningful work that a lot of people don't understand how meaningful it is and how delicate it is. So do be very, very careful about who you select in terms of bringing them in, and be intentional about where you are and what you are ready for from other people in your life. So you can make it social and light. You can include friends in the process. Like you can have painting buddies and a paint night where you paint on a regular basis, for example. You can agree to meet and just paint together. You don't have to critique each other's work. You can just chat. You don't even have to look at each other's work if you don't want to. And the wonderful thing about this is it can be monumental in getting you started. It's like going to the gym with a friend. You don't want to let them down. So you get up and you actually go. And it's more fun anyways, because you can talk to them and you can chat and socialize. Plus you're getting your workout in. Plus you're getting your painting in. You can do this in an informal way. Let's just get together and paint. Or you can have a craft night where you all do the same crafts. Or you can join a meetup of creatives who are doing something like this as well. It's great if you have those friends who are practicing in the same mediums. The next step outside of this is to actually start to share your work. And you can share your work within this social circle on a paint night. You can actually like spend time looking at each other's work and telling each other what you think of it if you're ready for that. Or you can go find some friends that don't paint or don't have any kind of creative practice and just ask them what they think about your work. Just share your work with them. If that sounds scary, here are some tips that will help you with it. Control the process, right? Let them know where you are in your creative process and what kind of feedback you're looking for. You can be very specific. Frame the feedback so that you're ready for it, right? You can ask them, hey, listen, I'm working on this painting and all I need for you right now is to be my cheerleader. Tell me what I'm doing good. Tell me what I need to keep doing. Just look at this and tell me the positive and then show them, right? And that will help you, right? That will help you move in the positive direction of your work. You can also ask for critiques about the big picture. For example, you've got this painting or this essay that you're writing, and all you want to know is, does this make sense, right? Does this sort of scene, I know it's not perfect, but does the scene make sense? Does the concept make sense? Is it compelling to you? Just big picture feedback. You might then be ready after some time you work on this painting and all you want are details. Just take a look. I don't need the big picture. I'm already done with that. What needs refining here? What kind of editing do I need to do? And anything in between, you can ask, did I use the right color combination? Would you have used this? Should I have used the lighter yellow or what is this? Or you could even get into the questions like, what does this make you feel? If you control the feedback, like what you really want to know, if you spend some time around why am I sharing this and what do I want to know, then you can keep the feedback safe and keep yourself motivated in the direction of creating instead of just going, you know, sort of throwing a painting at somebody and asking them what they think and then seeing the look on their face and interpreting that look. Yeah, no, frame it so that you can get the feedback that you need to keep creating. Once you get practice doing this, like eventually it's very empowering to share your work. It's very empowering to leverage your community. It's very empowering to take the next step in the creative process because really artwork is not meant to be left in a closet. The reason why you're creating is because you're sharing your experience, right? You are sharing your experience. You're translating your experience into this art form and you're sharing it. It's out there. It's in the world. So the next step has got to be like, put it into the world. So when you get to a point in your art making that you are feeling safe and secure in your work enough that not everybody has to love it, and you're just kind of curious what people think and how that might help form your work in the future, you can then do things like use social media or you could blog about your work. And it can be a very safe place for encouragement and community. And it can also help you document your progress, right? It's always really interesting to see the evolution of an artist and including yourself. I find it really interesting to look at a painting that I did almost 20 years ago as opposed to what I'm creating now because it's definitely evolved quite a bit. Something like Instagram can definitely document that, or a blog can document it as well. And that documenting your progress is motivating. You see where you started And you can see that you're with each painting, with each poem, with each essay, you're actually getting better at your craft or more interesting at your craft. And you have options with social media. You can make it private. You can only invite the people that you want to see your work, or you can make it completely public. And that can be part of your evolution. You start with a private group and you move into the public space. These are all parts of your evolution. The more that you share, though, and the more used to getting to sharing your work, the more you're going to create, honestly. I mean, as long as you keep it safe, right? As long as you stay grounded in your identity and in your emotions around this, and you stay safe, feeling good about the creative practice, you're going to keep creating. There's something sort of addictive about finding your tribe of people who actually like your work and keeping on sharing it with them. It can keep you moving. And along with that, the final thing that I want to add to this is a huge one for me too. I'm definitely working on this. Learn to hear and absorb the appreciations. They are real. People love you for the work you're doing. Let it all in when they say good things about you. Really let it become a part of you. Don't just deflect. Don't just disagree. Don't just ignore whatever good things people are saying about you, because you're going in the studio, because you're practicing, because you're trying, because you're really putting yourself out there doing this. It's going to be crucial to pay attention to all of the good in this. There's going to be a lot of good coming your way. The reason why it's crucial is we're hardwired toward leaning into the negative. Even when it's only 1% of all the things that you hear about your work, we are hardwired to pay more attention to the negative than to the positive. So we have to be very intentional about taking in the good vibes and the attention that you're getting for maintaining and working on your creative practice. It's going to make you strong if you let that in. It is like protein for muscles. It really builds your muscles up. It will keep you creating because of all this good vibe stuff. It feels good. And eventually, because it's working those muscles, eventually, you're going to be strong enough to take in that 1% negative and see it for what it really is, which is just 1%. That is not a lot. So really work on bringing in the good, on hearing all the compliments, on focusing on the positive, knowing that it's not natural. It's not natural. So you must be intentional. And so that when that 1% of something that's not quite perfect, not quite positive, you can look at it, right? And you can see it for its 1%. And you might even say, well, you know what? That's actually good advice. I can see how I can grow in that direction. And the feedback can be helpful. But you also recognize it for where it sits in your world, which is in that 1%, right? That it's an area of growth, but it's not an area to destroy you. In conclusion, just let it in. Let it all that goodness in, lady. Because you deserve it. You are on your creative path. So there are a lot of facets to creating habits, from the mechanics of goal setting to breaking it all down to scheduling it and rewards and making it easy and removing the hard stuff that I talked about in episode 5. Those structural elements can be great. They can be very helpful in creating habits. Remember, underlying all of this, when you're at the beginning of creating a habit, self-compassion, self-compassion, self-compassion. You must love yourself in this process. You must love yourself. Love that you're trying. Love that you want to create. Love all the attempts and all the mistakes and all the failures, because you are on the creative path. Do your best to love yourself. Self-compassionate. And be intentional about your self-identity. You have a little inner artist or a big inner artist inside of you. Let her have a voice. Call yourself an artist. Let her be an artist. Notice when your inner artist is tugging on you and noticing all the beauty around you. This can only be a good thing. But recognize it. This means that you are an artist. Take it on as your identity. and include those moments when you're acting like an artist, as being an artist. You're cataloging it all. You're building evidence for your identity. When you catch yourself painting with your eyes, collecting and appreciating beauty, thinking about a painting or artwork, they're all part of your practice and they count. They mean that you are an artist. Also, equally, be intentional about how you want to feel in your creative practice. Know how you want to feel and work with how you want to feel. Dig deep into the feeling that you want that will motivate you in your creative practice. Do you want that sense of flow, that peace, the excitement, the love, the feeling of being imbued? Everything is imbued with love. Describe it in a journal. Get really clear about your intention to feel it and connect it to your creative practice. And then finally, make it social. Bring in your friends. Share your work. Accept their goodness. Accept their goodness when it comes in. Use their good words to build your muscles, love, and presence to keep you motivated and excited. Whew, that is a lot. Habit making is big business. Creative practices are worth it. And I hope a little of this, just a little of it, will help. Try to use what you can. Maybe listen to episodes 4 about the art ritual and this one, and 6 a few times to absorb it all, because it was a lot of content. And attend to your practice. Recognize that it's hard work. Piece by piece, it's going to come to you. Love yourself along the way for every mess and every victory, because you are doing it. You are practicing your creative habit. You are coming closer and closer to your authentic you that wants to create, that inner artist, that you. Self-compassion creates the change that you're looking for. Thank you for spending this time with me and for spreading the word about Creative and Curious. You can find me here every Thursday with new thoughts and insights on creativity, curiosity, and life. Tell me what you think. Please email me your comments and questions at marika@marikarenke.com. And if you feel inclined, leave a review. They really do mean the world to me, and they'll help this podcast reach people just like you. And the best thing that you can do? Keep creating. Thanks again.